This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey.
President Lincoln, sir.
Hey, boys.
And we saw you at... We were at...
We was at Gettysburg.
You boys fight at Gettysburg?
No, we didn't fight there. We just signed up last month. We saw him 2 years ago at the cemetery dedication.
Yeah, we heard you speak. We heard... Damn. Hey, how tall are you anyway?
Geez, shut up.
Could you hear what I said?
No, sir, not much.
Four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth from this continent a new nation conceived in liberty to be dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
That's good. Thank you.
Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can wrong endure.
The words of President Abraham Lincoln in Gettysburg through the lens of Steven Spielberg's 2012 film Lincoln. An excellent watch, by the way. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, Lincoln said, 160 years ago this Sunday. But of course, the Gettysburg Address has become one of the best-known speeches in not only American history, but really in the English language. Only 5 copies of the speech, handwritten by Lincoln himself, are known to exist. One is in the White House, one's at Cornell University, and 2 more are at the Library of Congress. The remaining copy belongs in the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield, and at about this time every year, the museum puts its copy up on display. This year, it'll be available to view in the museum from today through November 28th, and on the anniversary on Sunday, admission to the museum will be free. To talk about what we know about this copy of the Gettysburg Address here in Illinois and how Lincoln's words have echoed through the years, we're joined now by the museum's Lincoln historian, Christian McWhorter, who's with us today live from Gettysburg, where he's attending the annual symposium of a group focused on Lincoln studies. Christian, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us again.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here. And yes, hello from Gettysburg. I'm just about a mile away from where Lincoln delivered those famous words.
Amazing. And listeners, you can join us as well today. What does Lincoln mean to you 160 years on? Do you have this? Are you one of those people who has this speech memorized? I'm always impressed at that. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, let's talk about the speech itself as a political speech, as a speech delivered at an event. What was the message Lincoln was hoping to get across with the address in that moment?
Well, that's the whole question, isn't it? People have been arguing about what might be the answer to that question for 160 years. But, I think you got to remember the context of it. I think Lincoln, I'll say a couple quick things and we can delve in further. I think he was legitimately grappling with the enormous loss of the Civil War. We know now that he witnessed some of that when he arrived in Gettysburg in mid-November. There were still, the aftermath of the battle had still not been completely cleaned up. And apparently that really affected him and may have prompted him to make some changes to the speech to more directly reference the soldiers and the sacrifice they made, because he saw it firsthand. And I think we also have to consider that it's almost a year after he issued the Emancipation Proclamation and a year away from the presidential election for his second term. So I think he's also trying to define for his audience what he's thinking about as the future of America itself and what American democracy means to him.
What do we know about what inspired him? What sort of elements he incorporated as he was writing the address?
Yeah, it's mostly, the parts we remember about the speech are its introduction, new birth of freedom and for the people, by the people. I was getting mixed up which comes first. But anyway, I do not have it memorized, so I hope your listeners do. although I probably should. Most of the speech is, Lincoln very humbly saying, when he says they won't long remember what we did here, people like to point that out. It's like, well, now everybody remembers. But what he's saying is what we're doing here talking about this battle and what it means nothing next to what the men who fought and died for America. And he's talking about the U.S. soldiers there, mostly, not the Confederate soldiers, though he doesn't directly say that. But what they did here to win this battle, to stop Robert E. Lee's second invasion of the North, you know, that's the real achievement. It's not what Lincoln and Edward Everett, the other main speaker that day, had to say. So, you know, that's what he's incorporating in is, you know, the supreme sacrifice of these soldiers, you know, now over, you know, 2.5 years into the Civil War, too. So he's been, you know, seeing this happening all over the country. And it's impacting Lincoln deeply. We know that. We know Lincoln followed the casualty numbers. We know that he started to get more invested in religion. You know, Lincoln never joined a formal church, but he starts to think about these things. And some of those ideas start to pop up in his later speeches, too. He's really almost having an existential crisis, you know, about the violence of the war, just like the whole nation was at the time.
Yeah, and of course, that's so famously, you can see it in the timeline of the photos of him during the presidency. He seems to age a lot more than the calendar might suggest one would. You know, nowadays, the Gettysburg Address, it's regarded, as I mentioned, one of the greatest speeches in history. At the time, people were more polarized about it. Talk about some of the contemporary reactions to the speech.
Yeah, and you know, that's it's another one of these things that people, we all, or almost all of us, you know, in the United States and outside the United States, revere Abraham Lincoln now. But we forget that he was a politician in an extremely divided time. In fact, probably one of the most controversial politicians ever elected president. You know, half of the country decided to pursue its independence rather than have him be their president. So it's no surprise then, when you think about it, that guess who liked the Gettysburg Address? Republicans. Guess who didn't? Democrats, right? They, you know, just like everything Lincoln said, and the media at that time, too, we think of the media today as being kind of hyper-partisan. Back then, that was just the norm. They expected the media to be hyper-partisan. So if you were an editor at a Democratic newspaper, you probably wouldn't even print the speech, and if you did, you were just going to say it was a bunch of hogwash, and you'd probably attack emancipation, and that would be your take on it. If you were a Republican, you would say that this was a bold, you know, vision for America and shows that Lincoln honors the troops, you know, kind of predictable results. So it wasn't until Lincoln's kind of assassination and when he kind of ascends into the national, you know, kind of canon that the Gettysburg Address kind of ascends with him and ends up on the wall of the Lincoln Memorial.
Exactly. Carved in marble or granite or whatever the material is there.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Yeah. And, you know, interestingly, in form as well as in content, it was unusual, right? People turned out they wanted to hear 2 hours of oration from the speaker back then, right? And this was quite a departure.
Well, and they got that. The other thing people tend to forget about the Gettysburg Address is Lincoln was not the main speaker that day. Edward Everett, who was a kind of famous orator, was the main speaker that day. And they got 2 hours out of Edward Everett. His speech took 2 hours to deliver. No one remembers that speech. And a transition into the copy that AOPLM has, which I'll add, by the way, to your introduction, belongs to the people of Illinois, right? We're a state agency. It's the people of Illinois' copy of the Gettysburg Address. It's Everett who asked Lincoln to write that copy out because he wants to sell it along with his own speech to raise soldiers for troops. And Everett says in his letter to Lincoln, "You said more in 2 minutes than I did in 2 hours." So, you know, that speaks directly to what you're talking about. The other thing to remember, too, about Lincoln, the ways that Lincoln is really politically savvy is probably his two most famous presidential speeches are the Gettysburg Address and the second inaugural, which is the other speech in the Lincoln Memorial. They're both really short, right? Well, they're not just short because they were concise and meaningful, although they were. It's so they'll fit in a newspaper easily, right? Because that's how most people aren't, you know, no one's recording the speech. No, you know, very few people are in the audience. The way you're going to get it out to the people is have it in a newspaper, preferably one column in a newspaper. And the Gettysburg Address snugly fits right on the front page of a newspaper, and it's wonderful that way. So that's the other context for it.
I love that the press secretary, you know, thinking of the communication strategy, we think of that as a very modern phenomenon, but definitely something that Lincoln kept in mind. How did this, so you mentioned this copy, handwritten by Lincoln himself after the fact for Edward Everett, his co-speaker, who said, "I should be glad if I could flatter myself that I came as near to the central idea of the occasion in 2 hours as you did in 2 minutes. Even his compliment
there you
was
go.
Not his compliment was not even concise. But so we have this handwritten copy. How does it end up in the possession of the people of the state of Illinois?
Yeah, it, we don't actually know. It's supposed to be sold in New York, and as far as we can tell, it was never actually sold. And then it ends up in the hands of a collector, and it kind of exchanges hands a few times until 1944, right in the middle of America's, you know, another great American struggle, World War II. It is up for auction, and it's at that moment that the state of Illinois and the Illinois State Historical Library, which is what we were called back then, decide that, you know, that all the other copies are accounted for and are held by the institutions you mentioned, and none of those places are in Illinois. And, you know, Lincoln's our guy in Illinois, so, you know, we need a copy. So they arrange with the auction house to buy it for $60,000. And the way they raise the money for that is one of my favorite stories. They have school kids in Illinois donate pennies and nickels, because they got Lincoln's face on them, to pay for it. And of the $60,000, they raise $40,000 just from these kids, which is just amazing. And then Marshall Field III kicks in the other $20,000. And that's how the state of Illinois gets their copy. And that's why we try to put it out once a year, right? We don't put everything out. You know, most of the stuff that we put on exhibit is on an annual rotation, by which I mean it's out for a year, and then we put it away, and then we might bring it back out again in like 5 years. But the Gettysburg Address, we put out every year for about, you know, 2 weeks, because it's just so incredible that we have it, and we're just so grateful to the people of Illinois, you know, that it's there to read and to be cared for, and it has just such an amazing impact when people see it.
Yeah, I did a quick inflation calculation, too, by the way. $60,000 in 1944 has the same buying power as more than $1 million today. All right,
only
a couple minutes left in our time together. Just talk about the... you know, when we think of the Gettysburg Address, right now it's a click of the mouse away. The library's website has a scan of this copy. We will link to that on our website as well. But talk about the difference of actually being in the presence of this document, you know, versus looking at it on a screen.
Sure, yeah. As a museum curator, I really believe in the power of being in the presence of historical objects. You know, as a kid, I would go to a lot of museums, and I loved all the hands-on stuff and, you know, the dioramas and the murals. But when you'd be in the presence of an actual historical object, there's a real kind of power there. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, we don't get out the Gettysburg Address very often, but when we do, you know, people have an emotional response to it. You know, you can have an emotional response to reading something, but once they see Lincoln's handwriting and those words that they've heard a million times, right, there's an emotional connection. You feel like you might be in the presence of Abraham Lincoln at one of his greatest moments, right? And it's impossible to replicate that without an object. And then what Lincoln object has more power than the Gettysburg Address, right? And so it's just a really meaningful thing. And I'm just thrilled that we get to exhibit it and tell its story the way we do.
Christian McWhorter is a Lincoln historian, the Lincoln historian, perhaps, at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. He joins us today from Gettysburg in Pennsylvania, where he's attending the annual symposium of a group focused on Lincoln studies. Christian, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
And once again, listeners, the Gettysburg Address, a copy handwritten by Lincoln himself, one of only five known to exist, will be available to view in the museum today through November 28th. And this coming Sunday, on the anniversary of the Gettysburg Address, the 160th anniversary, admission to the ALPLM in Springfield will be free. That's all the time we have for our program this week. Coming up on Monday's show, we're going to be talking with Matt Singer, who is a film critic. He's the editor-in-chief at Screen Crush, and he's also the author of a new book called Opposable Thumbs. It's about how Siskel and Ebert, Urbana's own Roger Ebert, how they changed the movie industry through their television show and just looks at their cultural relevance even today. Nowadays, you have tons of YouTube explainers on movies and all sorts of things like that. A lot of that traces its roots to Ebert and Siskel and their television program, which, of course, was marked by the two thumbs up. We're going to be talking about that on Monday's show. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Again, visit our website, 21stshow.org. You can get in touch with us, find links to our podcast. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll talk with you again on Monday.